Welcome back to the Ride and Laugh podcast. If you love mountain biking, you are in the right place. Picture your last group ride. You're back at the parking lot. The stoke is high. Everyone's excited about the last ride. You're talking bikes, tech, nutrition, progression. That's what we do here every week on the Ride and Laugh podcast. Welcome. Let's drop in. Sage, how are you?
Dude, I am doing so good. We hit a major milestone on YouTube. We got 100 subscribers. We're actually over 100 subscribers in 9 episodes. Unbelievable.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for subscribing. Thank you, everyone, for commenting. We're getting a ton of comments, ton of interaction, which is what we want. We want the community. And our listeners, I got to say, are pretty awesome. Like, we're getting some really, really interesting feedback, things that we hadn't thought of. So, and people just also saying that they're enjoying the pod and they're subscribed and they're listening. People are also writing in on the Gmail, RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com. So it's really cool. So thank you very much, listener and viewer, for enjoying and the positive feedback. Super appreciate it. Keeps us going. But like I said, we probably be having this conversation anyway. So now it's in front of a microphone. This is the kind of stuff we talk about. We love it. I called Sage a couple weeks ago, right before the pod, to talk about something else. And we're talking about biking. He's like, you know, we're going to be doing this in an hour, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Can't help it.
Yep.
All right. So we talked about the listeners. We wanted, our last episode was the single speed episode. And we got a ton of great feedback. People really, really, the single speeders came out. Single speeders are passionate. Yeah. And they came out and they commented, and we got a lot of views on that as well. I could only pick a couple of comments. There were so many interesting ones. So I picked from Rohan Gale 9130, and I had to repeat this one because we didn't talk at all about fixed gear bikes. And this dude's got 4 fixies.
Yeah,
and then one with a flip flop hub that he runs single speed, but you know, just in case he needs to put that as a fixie as well. That's another level, right? So, what does a fixed gear bike mean, right? Single speed, you can glide. What happens on a fixed gear bike?
I mean, that's it, right? You're connected to the bike. Every revolution equals a revolution on the wheel. Your feet are your most fixies don't have a brake because you are supposed to brake by slowing down your cadence or like pedaling backwards. It is, I've never done it, but it looks insane. It looks absolutely insane. You see a lot of like bike messengers and like city guys and gals like doing the fixie, man. That looks like crazy fun.
I don't think I've ever ridden one. I was going to say like, you know, the coaster brake, you know, where you go backwards to slow down as a kid, but this is different. This is different. If the wheel's turning, your pedals are turning. And so if you're flying down a downhill, then the pedals are turning with you at that speed. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So kudos to that guy. But we didn't even touch on the fixie. That's another level of single speeding. And he's got other crazy bikes that he talks about also, which could probably be a whole episode. This guy's stable. And then also I pulled the comment from Matt Vanderwalt. Said great video. He's enjoying the single speed content and made several interesting points. The one that I highlighted was that how the single speed is kind of like the great leveler. It's the NASCAR bike of racing. Yes. You know, it's like if you're on a single speed, we're all kind of mostly riding hardtails and single speeds, and so you know it's pretty raw. It's pretty raw, and you know there's not the guy with the much much better, much more expensive bike. Though some of those single speeds back in the day got pretty nice. I mean,
yeah.
But how much faster did you really get? Like if your single speed was, you know, titanium and custom made for your specifications, I don't know how much faster you really got from it, you know?
Well, I mean, if you're racing, then it comes down to seconds, right? So that matters. But for folks like us, you and me, like it doesn't matter. It just feels nice to have a really light bike that's blinged out. But yeah, I mean, unless you're racing, you know, who cares about a pound or two here and there?
The titanium is nice because the titanium does flex a little bit. So it does give you a little bit more comfort, really. I mean, we had titanium seat posts, we had titanium handlebars, anything that you, and they were, it was all really expensive. I bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you can get the same feel from steel, from what I hear. from people, you know, like
much heavier,
you
get though, right?
Steel, much heavier, but you know, and even rusts. Then with the and rust, but even with the technology today, you can get the steel frames pretty light. The way they're able to manipulate the metal and, you know, shave it down in certain areas, they're not that much more heavier. So, and it's far cheaper. I mean, you're looking at like a third of the price for steel frames.
Oh, so yeah,
if you're looking to get into single speeding, steel is real.
I mean, there are certain brands that are doing alloy, that are doing aluminum and claiming that it's just as light as carbon and has a nicer ride. I know Banshee only does aluminum.
That's right.
You know, so and some of that technology where they're able to cut out, make it lighter, they're able to do certain cutouts in the frame and make it flex a little bit. So, I mean, I have a Banshee hardtail, but it's not like I have a carbon version to compare it with. It does ride really nice. Yeah. So let's get into the rides that we did this last week. You and I rode Sunday at Mount Penn, and then you also rode Tuesday at a place called Allaire, which I have never been to. So why don't you tell me about Allaire, and then we'll talk about our Mount Penn ride.
Yo, Allaire, it has been on my bucket list for the longest time, and my goodness, it did not disappoint. It's a little bit of a hike for you and I, but
where is it?
It's in South Jersey, deep South Jersey. So it's that terrain that you can ride in like right after a rain, which I think is what makes Allaire really popular. So, you know, you and I had been going to Batstow, which is also in South Jersey, but Batstow is just incredibly flat. This is not that at all. This is like, there were really nice jump lines. I mean, whoever's doing the building over there, absolutely fantastic job. The maintenance over there, I think that's Jorba, that trail advocate over there. I don't think I saw a single tree down, but the ride was unbelievable, and I was with the right guy. I mean, Brian, B&E MTB, that dude, he's just so talented, and just being able to watch him and then him giving me some coaching advice on some of these jumps, it was unbelievable, Danny. It was really, really fun.
Or is there going to be a Trail Sage video on Allaire in the near
future? No, I haven't looked at the I did record it. I don't know if I have enough to do a full destination, but I certainly have enough for like a Sunday shred type of thing. So
okay.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'll have to take a look and see what I got.
I look forward to seeing that. Is it a big place? Could you find your way around, or do you need a tour?
It's a spaghetti. It's like Mount Penn. It's a spaghetti maze, unfortunately. In terms of the size, if you were going for a cross country ride, you could easily get like 30, 40 miles out of this place. I mean, it's huge, and there's trails everywhere. There's two sides. The ride that Brian and I did, it was much smaller. I think it was like in the teens, somewhere like that. And the elevation, well, we had sessioned the jumps, so the elevation's a little bit skewed. There's not much elevation. It's South Jersey, right? So they do a lot with very little.
Yeah, that's impressive. It's always impressive to see what trail builders can do with, you know, all right, this is where we're allowed to build. Let's make the best out of it. So I see that in Arizona sometimes. I see them like, I don't know where they're getting the dirt for these jumps. It's desert.
Yeah.
And then there's like a beautiful dirt jump buildup. I don't know, they're hauling it in. I don't see dig holes in the desert. You know, it's incredible. Where there's a will, there's a way. And for mountain biking, we'll find a way. That's cool. So Mount Penn, we had a really interesting and fun ride, some progression, but the ride starts where just randomly in the morning at our ride time, there's almost never anyone there. There's a couple guys that recognize you. And so who were these guys and what ended up happening that we ended up riding with them? Cause it was actually a really cool experience.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. We just pulled into the lot and, you know, I saw these two guys by the pickup truck. I naturally just wave at people at the lot, because it's not many people park at that Antietam lot. So when I see another mountain biker, I'm like, hey, you know. And then like they both came over and they're like, Sage, and I was like, yeah. And then I was like, oh my god, it's Hunter. So this is the one kid I knew from the slanted ground ride that I did at Rocky Ridge, and just a super really really nice guy. And he was there with his friend Sawyer. And they asked us to give them a tour of the tech, because they had been there for I said A-line, but it's actually Skyline. And so they had not known about any of the other stuff at Mount Penn. And I think that's like a theme. Like most people that go to Mount Penn, they're usually going for Boom Sauce or Skyline. But man, that mountain is a special place. And you and I,
oh, yeah.
We love that tech, man.
They were saying that they pretty much only shuttle Skyline. Skyline was closed for maintenance. So that might have been one of the reasons they were like, well, we need to do something else. And serendipitously, they ran into us and they asked us to show them some skinnies and some tech. And we were more than willing, you know. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then we like started to do some warm up tech and they were just blown away. And we were like, this is the warm up.
Yeah. 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 It was a good way to kind of like, I kind of knew his ability levels, but I had not seen him on tech because, you know, the riding that you do at Rocky Ridge is completely different from Mount Penn. So, and this goes for everybody, anyone that I take to Mount Penn, you know, Dan and I have like these routes that we kind of test people on. And, you know, if it's almost like the squirrel catcher of the ride, you know, and it's like, if they're able to do this, then we take them to the next thing. And if they're able to do that, you know, and so it gets progressively harder. And I think you and I, we started with Double Down? I think it was Double Down that we started on, which is a really nice entry level. Maybe it's not entry level, but it's a smaller slab. No, nothing there's entry level. That's true. But they killed it. They absolutely killed that line.
Yeah. And so right away, you could tell that, they knew how to ride bikes. Sawyer's only been riding for a year. And then Hunter's just like this naturally talented, gifted, just unbelievably confident and centered and controlled rider, like really a gifted guy. And I know Slanted Ground is sponsoring him. I'm not sure. And, you know, I guess in enduro races or whatnot, I'm not sure how that works, but I could see why the kid's really talented and really nice young man. They were really stoked to see the tech. And but he was just like super confident charging through everything. So after that, we went to that big long skinny that you call the Scorpion, I believe.
That's right. Scorpion.
Yes. So Winds of Change was in my head all day after you told me the name of that. And that one has a B-line. I don't even want to, I guess it's an A. I mean, you can't call it a B-line because it's a harder line. No. It's an A-line.
Yeah, it's an A-line.
We take the B-line. The B-line is straight. The A-line is picture a straight log, and then there's a half circle you can get onto that. So you can make a left and do this alternate route, and your bike's not really big enough. He didn't move his rear tire. So Hunter did it with panache, like easy. But he didn't move his rear tire. That's right. I said panache. I said it. Yeah. He didn't move his rear tire. And when we looked at the video, it was like a centimeter from falling off.
Yeah.
And it's pretty high. You really don't want that to happen at that point. So no. I think you were thinking about doing it and that put a little bit of pause. Do you think that made you pause?
Danny, that definitely put some pause into it. And that's where that Scorpion name comes from, because that little tail that shoots off to the side on the A-line. Man, his back wheel was literally hanging by a nub. And my confidence level after seeing that was like, maybe I'll wait. I mean, because that's a...
My back wheel's pretty worn in. I don't really have a lot of nubs left there, which means I'm not making that turn. Yeah.
No nubs. And it's derailleur side. So if you had slipped off of that spot, I mean, forget about it.
Damage.
Like you would have... Yeah. 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 So, you know, yep. Another day for sure. Maybe we'll go back with the single speeds.
That's true. You don't have to worry about the derailleur then.
Yep.
So after, I would say Sage did it first try. Hunter said he was going to, he did the whole thing, the straight one first try. And then the second time he was like, I'm just going to ride up to it and see how it feels. And then, you know, put my foot down. And then he just did the second route right away, first try. And so then Sage is looking at me, you know, I haven't done this one yet. And so Sage is looking at me, was like, dude, you got this. And, you know, there was the guys were there watching and, you know, I don't know, Ride and Laugh One at Gmail. Like, what do you think? Like when there's people watching, it doesn't really bother me. What bothers me if I feel like I'm holding up the ride, you know, and that's just like an old school feeling of like, come on, let's go, let's ride. So I did three quick, I would say, run ups, like where I got on. Every time I did it, the bike got on. I'm always worried about the rear tire not getting on. So like I'm thinking more about the rear tire than where I'm going. So finally I get up on the thing and I'm just locking my head. The bike is on. The bike is on. Get your eyes up and pedal. And I don't really like uphill skinnies. I don't really like pedaling on skinnies. This is all of those things. And just stayed focused and felt good and finished out the whole thing. And I was very stoked about that. So probably took me like 6 or 7 times. I'm not the protege. Yeah. Not the uber talented 16-year-old. You know, I got a lot of old, I got 48 years of hangups, you know, and fear build up into my brain. So, but I got through it. And so that was really cool.
You know, what was really interesting, Danny, is that I thought, yeah, I mean, you were struggling to get on, but there's that right where the entrance of where that scorpion tail starts, there's like a big transition joint. I thought you were going to stop there, but you like, when you got past that opening gig, you just kind of like went for it. Like you were just like in the zone. And I have a video of Danny doing it. So if you're watching this on the YouTube, I'll put the video in here, but like, I honestly thought you were going to stop. And then when you just kept going, and you looked just so smooth. Your eyes were up. You were like dialed in. I don't know where that came from. It was unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's funny because the when we did the skinny episode, and if you haven't listened to it, you can go back and watch the skinny episode or listen. And we just kind of like came up on these all these new skinnies at Mount Penn. And one of the things I said was I hadn't been visualizing this. And so I've been visualizing doing skinnies. I've been visualizing getting my eyes up and keeping my speed and feeling confident. And actually, during that episode, you said something to me that really resonated with me. And when I was asking about your technique for riding skinnies, because you're so good at it, and you said, I don't look at what can go wrong.
Yeah.
And as soon as we pulled up to that skinny, I thought about that. And I was looking at the exit, and I was looking at how high it was. And I just thought to myself, I'm not thinking any of those negative thoughts. What's the best that could happen? And like, I just let it go. I let those thoughts, they were there, but I just kind of let them go. I didn't give them any attention. And I was like, I think I can do this. I felt good about it. And then once I got that momentum going, I wasn't going to stop. I wasn't going to go halfway. And then, you know, cause for me, the hard part is getting going. Once I was going, I felt much better and I stayed relatively calm. You know, there were skinnies that we did a few weeks ago that were lower consequence that I was like starting to panic on. So, but I've been kind of like visualizing and seeing myself doing it. How do I feel when I'm doing it? How do I feel after I'm doing it? And saying out loud, I'm good at riding skinnies. And, you know, just getting that like program running.
You know what, Danny? I know we're talking about the Mount Penn, but I have to, you just reminded me of something. We're at the jump line at Allaire. And, you know, for people that are really good at jumping, I'm sure it's nothing. But for me, those jumps are significant. And, you know, the first run through, I'm casing everything. You know, it feels terrible. You know, and I got done that first run and I said, no, you are a good mountain biker. You can jump and you earn this. And I was careful to say earn. I didn't say deserve. I said earned because I often feel like the word deserve is a dangerous thing. Like we don't deserve things, but I've earned that. I've put so much time in at Smedley and, you know, all these different places, you know, Skyline and this moment, I earned that moment, you know, and I was like, I can jump. I am a good mountain biker. And probably about 14 times later, I said it once I believed it. Yeah. I start clearing it, man. It was such an amazing feeling. And I got to credit that to you because you're always saying that, you know, you're like, Sage, you gotta believe that, you gotta say it. And I did it and it worked. I cleared all the jumps and I was super amped for that.
What you're talking about is the belief, and whether you say earn or deserve, I mean, we deserve happiness, you know, like, well okay, you deserve to have fun on a bike. Why not? We're human beings. I mean, but earn is more into your alignment because you're a hard worker. So for you, your belief is that you need to earn things in order to be happy. That's your belief. And so this is now, and you could change that belief, but this is now falling into that belief system. So now it's locking into your belief system that I put the hard work in, and hard work means success. And so now I'm ready. And you know, I would alter that belief system a little bit so that you don't have to work so hard to get everything. You see me after class. We could talk about that. But yeah, you know, the bottom line is that you're believing it. And I used to hear language from you is that I can't jump. I'm just not good at jumps. I'm not good at lippy jumps. I had this accident and now it's a mental block. You know, anyone that's listening to the podcast, just recently, that was Sage's language. And
yeah.
And now you're shifting that language to I've earned this and I can do this. And you know, part of that Mount Penn ride was the very end. The conditions were great that day. And the very end, we rode this trail called Dane's Flow Around, which has three successive doubles in it. And you have to hit them at high speed and you have to kind of boost them. If you don't have enough speed, you have to boost probably the last two to get them. And Sage is hooting and hollering, I got him, I got him. And then we're talking after the ride in the parking lot. And he said, I got them all. And I said, I wasn't going fast enough. I cased the last one. And you said, I wasn't going fast enough either. I boosted it. And I was like, well, then you know how to jump, dude. Then you know how to jump. It's happening. So like, and then you go to a lair and you know how to jump. So yeah, this is unlocking. This is happening for you. This is unlocking. And yeah. Yeah, and it's going to be awesome. Jumping is so much fun. But yeah, you've been shredding, and you absolutely shredded that trail. That was a really good time. So I love to hear that. The next thing we did was we were going to take them to like one of the easier slabs on Mount Penn.
That's right.
Right? Is that what we did next? We took them to the slab that we call Sam Malone. There's two different lines on Sam Malone. We kind of showed them both. I demonstrated, that's something that we've done many times. And then Hunter did it, absolutely no problem. Sawyer did it a little fast, and I was giving him some tips on his speed and on getting low. And but he did it. I mean, we know a lot of guys that take a look at that and are like, no. So
yeah, he did it great. Yeah, he looked really good. Yeah, I mean, it was a little fast, but that's one of those things where it's hard to gauge the speed on that particular slab because it's not steep till it's steep, if that makes any sense, you know, because it starts out kind of mellow and you're like, oh, I have plenty of traction, but then it starts to dip and then there's nothing you can do to negate that speed because the slab ends and it turns into chunder. So you really had to like monitor your speed at the top. And so having said that,
you need
that,
a little speed getting into it, right? Because the line he used, it's janky. The old school line is janky coming in. And so you need a little bit of speed to roll over all that stuff. And then you're kind of like slowing down to start the slab because you will pick up speed on that slab. You can't stop on that. You know, it's steep enough. It can be scary. Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, for being, you know, only a year in for his riding, he was in the right body position. And so even though he was going too fast, it was no problem because he was in the right body position, which, you know, hey, that's number one. If you're just getting into mountain biking, number one thing is be in the right body position. That mainly.
Well, I actually think he could have gotten lower. We talked about that.
Maybe
he actually.
You're a really low guy.
He could have gotten lower. Yeah, I mean, I think that works for most people. You're such an instinctive rider, but I think most people going through tech, if you get low and you keep your weight centered, and like a good cue for that is keeping your chin over the handlebar, but you're hinged. You don't want all your weight forward, of course. So if you stay centered, but you want your arms to be able to have a lot of movement. So that you have a lot of bailout. We talked about that on the Drunk on Confidence episode when I fell off of a slab and I kind of got in a situation where my arms were fully extended and then I had an oh crap moment and there was no recourse. So you got to keep those arms bent so that you have room to work. But he was going for it. I mean, he was super interested in learning the tech. Really nice guy. I mean, we weren't even riding at 18. I mean, I'm so envious. We'll talk about that more. Cause so envious that these guys are into mountain biking already, you know? And it's really cool. So we're over there and we're pointing out other lines and Hunter's just like, you know, drinking it in. He just wants to do all the hardest lines on the mountain. And so you start telling them about no joke, right? So why don't you explain that part of the ride?
Yeah, so we're in the area of Penn. I think it's called Rotary Park. But this whole area is, I don't think there's anything less than a black. Everything there is like double black to pro level. It's legit. And so
old
Danny
school.
And I,
old
very
school.
Old school. Yeah, old school free ride stuff. And Danny and I kind of named this one line, which is a succession of features. We called it no joke. And so I was telling Hunter about it. And he's like, you know, I'd love to check that. I don't know if I'm going to do it today, but I'd love to check it out. And I was like, well, we're right here. Let's go take a look at it. I just want to note that this line, no joke, took Danny and I probably about, what, 2 months? 2 months to like take apart each section and accomplish each sections before we could even do the whole line.
We rode it for 14 years before we even like considered it, you know? And then we started doing tech. And I mean, the day that we did that whole line, I remember, and the stoke was off the charts. Like, I remember finishing it and like getting off my bike and like laying on my back, just like so excited and so adrenally exhausted, so scared. And then we started doing it somewhat regular, like kind of just like in the flow of a ride. And in one of those rides, I think you took me through it without saying anything. You were just like, you were feeling good. And you were like, oh, well, let's do this line. And I just followed you. And I got to the top of, there's a crux move that's like 12 or 14 feet off the ground. And I got to the top of that and hesitated. And I had done it several times, but I ended up jumping off of that ledge.
Yo.
You were already done. You were done the line. And so you were quite some distance away and you just heard some yelling. And did you see me actually jump off? I mean, I was somehow able to shed the bike and actually jump off.
Yeah, that was crazy. I did not get to see it. I don't have it on film, but that was insane. You didn't fall at the maximum height, thank goodness, because that was like 12 to 14 feet. But you were pretty close to the top. You were pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no good spot to land there. But somehow you got away with it.
I walked away and we kept riding and my shin hurt. And I didn't really give it too much thought. And then like 7 weeks later, when my shin still hurt, I was like, you know, I think I probably broke this when I jumped off of that feature. And it just wasn't bad enough to ever do anything about it. It was just sore for a while. But and then that was the last time I did it. That was a while ago. It was the last time I did it. I was just like, okay, you know what? I've done this enough. I'm not doing it again. Yeah, it was in my head. So
I didn't know that was the last time.
Yeah, the last time I did it was the time I fell off.
Wow. I'll be darned. I did not realize that.
Yeah, yeah. And so then we go to it today, and that we didn't do the beginning part of it, which is like really, really kind of janky. Right. The squirrel catcher into this line is very legitimate, chunder and tech. And then you have like a little bit of a straightaway to before you get a skinny onto this rock that takes you up 12, 14 feet in the air. And then there's a skinny down, and then there's a double skinny afterwards.
Yeah. It's a ledge.
The double skinny afterwards is a skinny with a, I'm sure Sage will put it in the video.
For sure.
It's also on I think I put it on the Ride and Laugh Instagram. So you can go on there and look at it if you would like to. But yeah, so then the skinny is a skinny to a raised skinny, which takes you up onto a slab, which then drops you off onto a really narrow, like shaky skinny that you can't even see in the videos because we're never at that part of the slab. We're always in the beginning. It looks much more impressive. But getting off of that rock is also somewhat challenging. The whole line is no joke.
It's no joke, yeah.
Yeah. So you took a look at it and you felt good.
I was feeling good that day. And I hadn't done it since our mindset video. So it had been probably about a year or so. Yeah, on the fat bike. Yeah.
And remember, I didn't do it then, remember?
You did not. You did not. That's right. Yeah.
That's right. I did the other line. That was also very hard. There's another really hard line in there.
Yes. Arguably harder.
Yeah.
What is that? No joke alt, which we need a better name for, but
yeah, I know.
But in any case, so yeah, Hunter was really excited to try it. And I said, well, okay, well, let me show it to you. Just so you get an idea for what it looks like, because you don't do an endo turn at the top, but I do. So as Dan was saying, the first skinny takes you up onto a rock ledge, and it's really narrow. It's narrow enough where your wide bars could scrape the rock. In fact, it happens a lot.
So I like to cut it really wide.
Yeah, you did. I like to cut it really wide and then do a slight endo shift. It's not a full turn. It's just like literally an inch or two shift to ride down. And I kind of wanted to show Hunter what that felt and looked like. And then also show him how do you get to the next line, which is not obvious how you would do that. So I get up there and, you know, I go through my breathing exercise. And yeah, that day, I don't think I've ever ridden that line so cleanly. There was just something about that day. It was just super traction. You know, the skinny had grip, the rock had grip, everything. And then I was just feeling really good. And then yeah. I guess by clearing it so nicely, Hunter was like, yeah, I'm up. Let's go. Let's do this. And he does it first. He does it first try. I mean, yeah. Literally took us 2 months. He does it first try. Literally 2 months run for
up.
Us.
This is his run up. Just like the skinny, he was like, I'm going to do a run up. And then, yeah. But then he looks at us like kind of and like kind of like shrugs his shoulders. He's like, but I might just do the whole thing, you know? And I'm thinking yeah. in my head, like, he's doing the whole thing, you know? And I knew Sawyer was like, yeah, I know this kid. He's doing the whole thing, you know? So there was no run up. Right. He just did it perfectly, perfectly. No problem. And, you know, we're just like, I don't know. I really don't know what is going to challenge this kid at this mountain. And there's some yeah. really hard things at that mountain. And he's an awesome jumper also. I mean, Sawyer said he's incredible in the air. So, yeah,
he really is.
You know, the kid's the full package. It's really, really impressive. And a nice, really nice young man. I mean, just, I think I want to adopt him. I'm going to call his parents. I'm going to call his parents. I don't think I don't know if you appreciate how good of a mountain biker he is. You know, like, you know, yeah. I'm going to marry him off to my kids. I'm just kidding, Hunter. You don't have to put a, what's the police thing they put out? The, you know, if you're too close to someone, the, what? Oh man, you're going to have to edit the out of this portion.
Wait, too close. No,
like
to
if like a stalker, you know, like you like if someone's being stalked, they get a, what's that called?
Yes. Yes. What is that called? It's, oh my gosh, it's not harassment.
I know everyone in their cars is like yelling it out right now. Yeah.
Restraining order.
Man. Restraining order. Restraining order. Yes. All right. Yeah. Whew. All right. Take all of that out. Take all of that out, including the creepy stuff I said. No one needs a restraining order. I just felt like I was being too complimentary, so I had to make it, you know, weirder. But no, he's a really good rider. So we could talk about, because I ended up doing that line also. But part of what I wanted to talk about, what we wanted to talk about this podcast was, like, it's really good to see young people out enjoying trails, and not just enjoying trails, enjoying tech. We don't see anybody on those trails. And, you know, I know that they love jumping and going to the bike park, and they were talking about getting their passes to Blue Mountain. But these dudes wanted to ride tech. They wanted to ride skinnies. They wanted to get better at it. And I was just really stoked on that. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. You know, Danny, one of the things that really stuck out to me for both Hunter and Sawyer were just how receptive they were to all the things that we were saying. You know, they were so eager to learn. Like, I know because you and I and you know, we're often riding with people that are more our age, you know, who have been riding for a long
time. Age appropriate.
Age appropriate. And when you get to a feature, oftentimes you can't get out of your own way. We talk about that all the time. Like you have like, mm-hmm. This is how I do it and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, we're trying to give them advice about how to approach this or what the technique is. And it's like, no. Let me just, you know, not these kids. These kids were like really, okay. Oh, this is what I do here. Oh, and I have to look out for this and blah, blah, blah. And just, I just found that absolutely fascinating. I know when I worked with the Fire Girls, that's females first in racing enduro.
Awesome My group, gosh. By the way. Check out their Instagram. Yeah, yo. They're so cool. They're so inclusive. It looks like they're every time I turn on their Instagram, they're just like pumping up one of the kids, you know, just like this awesome video of one of the kids and everyone's smiling and having fun. That's what mountain biking is all about. It looks like an awesome group. And I know you've had really nice things to say anytime that you've had a chance to go out and ride with them, and you've been really impressed.
They usually call me when they want to session Mount Penn. So they want to kind of get ready for the race season. And every time I've taken these girls to Mount Penn, they are so open to learning. And it's just mm-hmm. so refreshing, you know, whereas mm-hmm. like an adult would be like just stubborn and just these girls were just like, yeah, well, give me more information. I want to learn. I want to do this. And I felt that same thing with Hunter. And then the other thing that I noticed with Hunter is his confidence. And I don't know if that comes from, like, you know, just having that fearless, like when you're young, you don't have as many responsibilities, as grown men, you know, we have kids.
Yeah, no, it's the time,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the time to be throwing your body all over the place. And if you break an arm for a summer, it's like not the end of the world. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I loved watching that kid work, man. He was just like, let's do it. And like you said, that the confidence was oozing off of him.
Now, what's interesting, too, is starting mountain biking now. And so they were on really nice bikes. Modern geometry, big travel. Sawyer was on the Canyon. I forget which one it was, but it had
the
like
Strive.
The Strive where the suspension can change with a button, which I was looking at that. I ended up getting the Evo, which the suspension can change with like 20 minutes in the garage. This thing changes on the fly. It looks so cool.
Right,
So they're on these new bikes and they're learning on these awesome bikes. And when you look at like what we learned on, and you know, I think a lot of our listeners from the single speed comment, I think a lot of our listeners have been riding bikes for a long time, at least the guys single speeding. But you know, regardless of when you started, the mountain bike tech just gets better and better and better and better, and bikes get better and better and better. And you know, these newer bikes inspire confidence 100%. It would be so cool to learn on those bikes. So, I mean, should we get into which of the mountain bike tech has been the most impactful from when we started to riding bikes to what these kids are now starting on?
I know what my answer is. I have a feeling that we'll probably have the same. It'll be like the Gratitudes. We'll have like the same one. So
it's going to be hard to pick. It's going to be hard to pick one. Like I was driving home thinking about this and I just kept thinking of more things to write down. I would say geometry is the main one. The fact that you can sit in these bikes now instead of on top of the bikes. Like when you sit in a modern geometry bike, it gives you so much more confidence and it's slacker. So if you're doing tech, it's especially the steep stuff. What was really interesting, actually, we haven't talked about it, is that I ended up doing that no joke line also for the first time on that bike. And one of the concerns that you had, we're all over the place on this podcast, but one of the concerns that you had about a new bike was that it would be too long to do this old school tech. And your bike is not, any bike you get is going to be anywhere near as long as the bike that I have. Because I'm riding an extra large, it's an S5 in the Specialized world, but I have this thing slacked out as much as possible. It's a huge, it's a super long wheelbase. And I got up on that thing and I made the turn. So I don't know what else is going to be there. I mean, maybe we'll try no joke alt, but there's not much else in there that's like tighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought that was really telling. And I was just like, all right, well, Sage, like any modern trail bike you get is not going to be anywhere near as long as this bike. And this bike just
that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Without an endo turn, you know?
Yeah.
So
you looked so smooth. And again, if you're watching this on the YouTube, I will put the video in there, but Danny looked really smooth. But I got a piece of tech, and I know you're gonna agree with me. And as soon as I say it, you're gonna be like, "Oh yeah, this beats geometry."
Dropper.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jinx. Yeah. Yeah. That changed my life. And I use my dropper that I wear out that thumb shifter. I used to dropper so much. I drop it for everything. I drop it for climbs. I drop it for you name it. I drop it. Like it's unbelievable. That thing changed the whole perspective of how you mountain bike, you know? And to me, it was because of the dropper that a lot of these other changes happened, you know? And then there are so many like smaller changes, but your geo is huge. But I would argue that dropper kind of inspired that, because once you dropped your seat, you kind of got into your bike. You were no longer sitting on top of it. You got into it. And once people realized, hey, this is kind of a nice position, they start changing
that
geo.
Yeah. We could get a frame builder on that, you know, was building bikes in 2015, 2016. That would be cool to be. I mean, I don't know any frame builders, but that would be cool to just be like, when did it start to click? that yeah, if you change yeah. this angle on the head tube and this angle on the seat tube, that you could kind of like offset those things and then just get this everybody inside of these bikes. It's such a crazy feeling when you sit on an old geometry bike. When we sit on our single speeds and you're like on top of that bike, or if you just get on a beach cruiser, you know, if you get on like, yeah. you know, a hybrid bike or something like that in the bike shop, you know, you'll be like, wow, I feel like so tall on this thing. And then you get on your mountain bike and you're sitting inside of it. I mean, it's just awesome. But the dropper yeah. post is, I agree, that was a huge one. And modern dropper posts are awesome. But yeah. they didn't start that way.
No, they
and
didn't.
We had no. the old ones, man. We had the old ones. I had one called the gravity dropper that had an accordion rubber piece on the outside of it.
Yeah.
And it was all mechanical. So it would only go up, it would go up or down based on holes in it. So like the pins would catch, you know, and you'd have to like kind of line up the hole that you wanted it or the whole thing. And it was just really kind of a piece of garbage, but it was the best at the time.
Yeah.
And that rubber sleeve, the condom on the
condom.
That's what Rich used to call it. My bike had a condom. Kept the dirt out, because if any dirt got in it, it stopped working. And I had two of those things. I think I had one on the fat bike. I think I had one on my then geared hardtail. And then so I was the first one to get the dropper, and then I convinced you. And then we got the X Fusion. Is that what it was? On our hardtails?
I don't think I had
what
X
was that
Fusion.
Brand?
I got the it was X Fusion. I think my first one was a Specialized, I forgot the name of it, but that thing, holy moly, it was like spring
command post,
and it would, thank you. That thing would just impale you. It would come up so fast. You'd hit the button. And I mean, if you, as a dude, you know, if that thing hits you in the wrong spot, you were out for a while. I mean, it was, they've come a long way.
It's an ejector seat.
They've come a long way. Yeah, it's an ejector seat.
Go, gadget ejector seat. Oh, no. Yeah. I like a post that comes up fast. I like my post to come up fast, but not that fast, not scary fast.
Not that
but I like it to come up fast. I like to hear the thunk. I like it to know that it's up. But, you know, I've been running the 1UP V2 forever, and now I got a 1UP V3, and it's such an awesome post. It's so reliable. But I remember just going through these different iterations of dropper post, and do you remember? I was, like, famous for my dropper post issues. There was always a dropper post in the shop. I think I had two Fox transfers that were under warranty at one point.
Yo.
And they would take forever with them. And then you wouldn't have your dropper post. You'd have to put a regular seat post on. And it was just, it completely changed your riding. So they were really unreliable for a long time. And now it's just like, and these guys are riding these bikes where everything's reliable. The suspension's reliable. The dropper post is reliable. The wheels don't get knocked out of true. You know, if you're riding carbon wheels, even probably the high quality aluminum wheels, our wheels used to get knocked out of true all the time. And what about how wide the wheels are?
Yeah, Danny, that was another one of your, that was another one that you pushed me toward. You were
right.
the first to adopt the
I
wider did. Wheels and
I pioneered
coached me
that
into
one
that
too.
One. Yeah, man, that was a game changer, man, to be able to.
Guess who did ride wider wheels? This guy.
Yep,
you know, what sold me was actually your company. I believe it was Ibis started doing the wide wheels first. And they had all this.
My
people
company.
Didn't believe it. You know, the company that doesn't sponsor you, Ibis. Yeah. even though he loves you so much.
I do.
But yeah, they had, I remember reading their literature, convincing people that a wide wheel made sense and why it made sense. And I came across it. I was, you know, I've always been absorbing mountain bike information. So I probably write about it in Mountain Bike Action or something like that. And I just started reading it and studying it. And I was like, this makes sense. And we were riding hardtails, geared and single speed hardtails. And boy, they made a huge difference. This is before the 27.5 plus craze that ended up kind of like taking over, which is kind of a result of the fat bike craze, where people realized that wide tires were like kind of absorbing the trail And then that all kind of went away when people were like, "Ah, there's too wide. There actually is too wide. The tire gets too heavy." So, and I had a 27.5 plus also.
My gosh. You know, we could, that behemoth, yeah.
There's just been so much. Oh my God, that thing was so heavy. There's been so much evolution in mountain biking. We talked about road biking a little bit. I think I forget which podcast it was, but we talked about how slow they are to change and how fast mountain bikers are to adapt to new things, or how much faster. So wider wheels, better suspension, lighter bikes, geometry, dropper posts. What else? Wider handlebars, right? We used to run these really skinny handlebars. Now you get there's math to get a wider handlebar so that you're in a more comfortable attack position.
Yeah, I still run not that wide of a bar, believe it or not. They're wider than when I started, of course, but I don't go crazy with the wide bar. You know what I've always, and I think I was the first to adopt this one, and I kind of coaxed you into it, short stem. I always ran a short stem. I just loved being connected to that front tire. And
you have. You always love that.
Yeah. So even though I don't run a really wide bar, I think I do like 760 or 780, which is not that wide. For me, it's about my shoulder width. And, you know, if I start getting too wide, then my hands are too far out. I need that ability to kind of bend my elbows, especially because I don't get low, as you pointed out. You know, I need that shorter bar to like give me a little bit of extra play in there. I don't have a problem controlling the bike at high speed or anything like that. So I never felt the need to go super wide.
No, that's the kind of rider you are. You're a snappy, quick kind of rider. I've often compared Sage to like Waterbug, just Waterbug quick in turns. I mean, if it's a straightaway, I can keep up or maybe even get in front of you. But if there's a lot of turns, recently I'm doing better, but I mean, bike fit and getting it, that's a whole other subject. We got so many pods coming up, people, but there's, you know, bike fit and getting the right fit in the cockpit and everything and dialing that in. And, you know, like, you don't want to have to buy, you know, 12 different stems and 14 different handlebars to figure it out. You would like to figure it out in one shot, but I feel like the stock bikes now come like with like pretty generic good fit. Like, you can get on that thing and shred. And it wasn't always that way. And now, and all the, there's all these videos out on how to set sag, and the shock companies like know that people are struggling with that. So some come with like tools to help you set sag, and certainly the guys in your local bike shop can help you do that really quickly.
Yeah.
That's something that we never were any good at before. We're setting up suspension. Now I got the ShockWiz. That's an awesome little tool to set up your suspension.
Changer. Yep.
Yeah. What about one by drivetrains? And when we started, we were running three bys.
Yeah, three bys and then two bys. And then, I guess if you're going to go one by, you have to talk about the narrow wide tooth. You know, that was a huge innovation to be able to keep that chain on that one by. Because, if you're new to riding, maybe you don't even know what a two by or three by is. But you had a front derailleur, basically. It was like a chain guide that would move and change your front chain ring. And so because that was there, that often helped to keep your chain on that front chain ring. So once you didn't have those other gears, you only had that one by, well, now you needed a way to keep that chain on the thing. And
well, you weren't going to shift into the front. You weren't using the front gears to shift anymore. So then they realized that they could design the teeth on the front chain ring to not lose the chain. Before, in the past, they would have to, because there was a derailleur up there, it would have the chain would have to be able to move. But chains were constantly falling off. I mean, chains were always falling off. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess you can add the clutch to that too. The narrow wide tooth and the clutch to the
Another
derailleur.
Awesome
that was
innovation. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Game changer. So, but yeah, I mean, and then I guess if you're going to go off of that, it's, you know, 1x12s, 1x11. You know, when we first started out, it was like 1x, it was like 8 or 9 speed. Of course, you had, you know, three rings to choose from in the front. So, you know, an 8 speed or a 7 speed wasn't that bad. But once you went to 1x and you're only rocking 9 gears, that gets pretty hard. So, you know,
not having to worry about the front derailleur and that, because like once you shifted the front into a different gear, if you were in the middle, then you went into the big, then that totally changed what was happening in the back. And so you were like doing math to figure out What gear do I want to be in? I mean, I remember like usually just like trying to stay in the middle gear because I didn't feel like having to figure out if I switched into one of the other gears, now what do I have to do in the back? You know, like it was just too much going on.
And so much.
But the one by really simplifies riding. And I think this is this is a good, in a way, like talking about all these innovations and how awesome they are and how we're in a great place we are in mountain biking right now. Gratitude.
Yeah.
Gratitude, mountain bike industry. I mean, people complain, but we have awesome bikes right now. And I'm very grateful for that. But when you look at why we were single speeding, it was because of this. Because the bikes were complicated and janky and didn't work that well. And the single speed was just simple and easy. And hey, let's just ride this bike with one gear and not much going on it. You know, that's it was just so much easier. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's probably why the single speed caught on and was so attractive to so
at
many
that
folks.
Time.
So really good point.
Yes.
Yeah, at that time.
It was the right time for single speeding.
Well, shoot. I mean, do you want to, since you just mentioned gratitude, or was that your gratitude? Like,
Yeah, that's true. I will expand on that because I had written something else down, but I'm gonna save that for a different one because it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Yeah, I'm. You know, my mountain bike gratitude of the week is just gonna be the evolution of bikes and the bike industry and where we are with these bikes and just kind of looking back where we came from. And, you know, Sage and I are just talking about from when we started, from our memories. So, you know, there's guys older than us that are going to say, well, hold my beer. You know, like you guys should have seen these bikes that we were riding in, you know, in the late 90s. And I actually had a bike from the 90s. It had caliper brakes on it. That was my first mountain bike that I got in the late 90s. And I mean, this thing, you know, barely had suspension and I loved it. You know, it was what we knew. But from like the advancement in mountain biking has just been awesome. And I don't know. I'm just like having a hard time figuring out where, excuse me, how to breathe. I'm having a hard time figuring out where we're going to go next. Like how much better can these bikes get? I know the e-bikes are coming out or are out and are probably going to come down in price. Hopefully that would be a cool thing to add to a stable, but I'm just kind of curious where things are going to go next. What do you think? Ride and Laugh One at Gmail, comment on the YouTube. You know, what was your favorite mountain bike innovation of all the things that we talked about or something that we missed? Absolutely. I'm sure we missed some. So throw that into the comments, your favorite mountain bike innovation or Ride and Laugh One at Gmail if you prefer to email it. And I would say that just the evolution of mountain bikes and where we are and mountain bikes is super cool. So gratitude. Thank you, bike industry.
Yeah.
What about you, Sage?
You know what? I had a different gratitude, but I am going to switch gears too. I had written down a different gratitude, but I am going to go with the dropper. So the more I thought about it, like how much that has affected what kind of a rider I became. I mean, I was never one of, I don't know if you ever did this, but there were guys and gals that would release the seat post clamp and drop their saddles. And I never did that. I was just like, I'll just kind of work around the saddle, which led to a lot of like mishaps with the crotch area, you know, cause you're trying to like ride behind the seat, you know, and do all these things. And
there's a whole technique of how to ride with that seat post up all the way. And then there was, do you remember the dropper that was a seat with a handle in it? And so you would squeeze the handle underneath the seat and that would drop it.
I never had it.
Very... I always thought, I was like, that looks like too much work.
They still make that. Yeah. They still make
do
that.
Do they really?
Yeah. Oh it's gosh. A manual. Yeah. I've thought about it too. It's not a bad idea. I mean, you do have to take your hand off the handlebar, which is a bad idea, but it's less parts. It's less parts. So if you're just like, I'm going to stop, you know, drop the saddle and then ride again. Anyway, droppers is my gratitude. so thankful for the evolution of droppers. My mountain bike tip is actually going back to my ride with Brian at Allaire. And this is going to surprise you, Danny, because you know I am not a follow guy. In fact, I am anti-follow for myself. I followed Brian and it got me over the jumps. I'm not saying that I'm a follow guy now, but my goodness, to know the speed and then just say, okay, whatever the speed is that he's going, do not touch your brakes. That is the appropriate speed. It got me over the hump. So like the line is called the Parkway jumps, I think. It's a succession of like six or seven jumps, and they get progressively bigger. And I was casing the last two. Like I was just casing. I couldn't like stop myself from feathering the brake. As you know, that's one of my big problems. So I said, I was feeling really comfortable on the jumps. So I said, well, you know what? Let me get a follow cam of you, Brian. That way, you know, I'll have some POV. Even though I won't clear it, I'll get some POV of you. Lo and behold, I'm following him and I don't touch the brakes and I cleared them all. I couldn't believe it. Yes. So mountain bike tip, even though I was anti-follow, if you are just getting into mountain biking and you have the ability to follow someone that's better than you at a certain thing, definitely follow. It is tremendously helpful. Not only will it show you the right line, but it'll show you the right speed. And if you are confident in the person in front of you, in other words, like you're confident in their abilities, it's going to give you confidence too. And I benefited from all three of those things following Brian. So Brian, if you're listening, thank you very much.
And you weren't concerned about him boosting, because you said at Sears he's an accomplished jumper who naturally boosts.
Yes,
I remember. And you were like, "Well, I don't boost, so I need to go faster." And so yeah. Did you guys talk about this? Did you say don't boost?
Yes, I specifically said that. I said, "Listen, I need to get the follow cam for the channel." I say, "You got to go fast. You can't boost. You got to go. If I'm going to follow you, you got to go."
And he could do that. That's impressive. That's impressive.
The guy could do anything. You know, he's like, no problem. He's like the Hunter of New Jersey.
Except he's not 16. He's a grown man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But yeah, so it was just a really good day, Danny. It was a really good day. And I owe a lot of that to Brian, man. Just such a good dude.
Well, that's awesome. All right. So there you go. If you follow the right person at the right speed, that can give a lot of confidence, can make you feel pretty good. So that is excellent advice. All right. Well, if you're still listening, you're absolutely one of us. You're a mountain biker. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you. Go ahead and rate and subscribe on YouTube. Go ahead and download and rate and subscribe on your podcast player. Comment on RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com or in the YouTube comments, anything that you want to hear us talking about in the future. We appreciate you listening so much. Thank you. Ride and laugh. Have a great week, everybody.
I'll see you, everyone.